Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
You're listening to The Spectrum with Bob Ivory and Ivory Coast Media Production.
Greetings and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the holiday year-end presentation of The Spectrum with Bob Ivory. You'll be listening to show highlights since we began our journey together this year. I hope you enjoy. Have a happy holiday, and may the new year bring new hope, blessings, and peace to you and yours. God bless. Once again, enjoy. When you think about the future, what do you see? What do you feel? Yeah, let's go to the feeling place inside you, the place of fire and passion, that place where your fondest, most desired dreams dance not only in your head but in your heart. When you were a child, didn't the adults ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? Do you remember that sense of wonder and seemingly endless possibilities? That magic stayed with you for a while, but then you got a little older. You earned some scars and bruises. You got even older, and the challenges of life seemed to get bigger and bigger and bigger. The punches were harder, more rapid. It's like the magic and wonder you experienced in your wonder years are knocked right out of you. It may feel like it, but I'm here to tell you that the magic is still in you. That's right. It's still in there. It's just hard to feel it past some of the hard knocks of life. I'm here to tell you that you've got a lot more fight in you. Because that dream you had way back when is still within, and it is struggling to emerge. It calls to you, shouting, let go of the doubt. Let go of the fear. You're closer than you think. Keep the faith. Take the leap. No, I won't kid you. Yes, there's magic that can happen in your life, but we cannot ignore the power of negativity. That's right. Negativity. Negative stuff happens in the real world, whether we want to admit it or not, but I don't think there's anybody on the face of this planet that would deny that negative things happen to all of us. Hurt people, and those scars can take long to heal, if ever. Imagine the damaged self-esteem of a young woman, for example. Sexually abused as a child, trying to sift through all of that emotional trauma to carve out a successful life for herself. Imagine now this same young woman also being starved for genuine affection, care, and concern. Imagine her being told, you'll never amount to anything. You're only good for one thing. What is she to do? She searches for love as best she knows how, often in the wrong places. She loses herself in sexuality, looking for love and finding only abandonment and disappointment. A child is produced. I won't even start about the two jobs she has to work as a single mother to keep a roof over hers and the child's head. It is not long before her child discovers that pain transfers like a virus. It's a vicious cycle. That said, it is also true that cycles can break. One of the most powerful things you can do is engage in the destruction of negative disempowering behavior. The content of our humanity is a wondrous and powerful force. Despite all the dirt that has been kicked at us and the warm heaping piles of stinking excrement that have been dumped on us, we can take it all and turn it into a farm where manure and filth become fertilizer. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Spectrum with Bob Ivory. We have a special guest on our show today, the one, the only, Mr. Benny Randall Jr. Today's theme is success and the single dad. So I know in your coaching business, you talk a lot about the mindset. Why is the proper mindset such a big deal? Why is it so important?
The mindset creates the world you experience. That's what most people don't realize, that what you have in your life was created by you. So if you feel like you're lacking at this moment, it's because your mindset is lacking. It's just that simple. You created the environment you're in. No one else created that environment. Somewhere along the line, you believe you could or you believe you couldn't. Okay, as the old saying goes, back in the days, that says, you know, whether you say you can or you can't, you're right on both occasions. So I tell people, if you look at your life and you're not happy, it's because you haven't done enough and you haven't changed your mindset enough to actually get the abundance that exists.
Now, do you remember in your own life a time of having a lack mindset?
Oh, of course. When I was young, I thought I was the black sheep of the family. I thought I wasn't, you know, I had, you know, the brothers and the sister and, you know, where I come from, it was all about whether you're light skin or dark skin and, you know, how you look and all of that mattered, you know, so me being the dark skin brother, you know what I mean? I didn't get the girls. They wasn't running after me. They wasn't bringing my phone off the hook and nothing like that. So, you know, I believe that maybe there was something wrong with me. You know, like I wasn't special. And what I realized is that I really was special. I just didn't have the mindset to understand it. So therefore, I produced that lack that I seen instead of that growth that was within.
From observing you in videos with your children and the posts that you make concerning your children, it's clear you've made a conscious decision to be very present and active in their lives. Talk about the decision, because it's obvious it's not a decision that all fathers make to be involved in their children's life. And if you don't mind, talk about how you deal with the challenges of being a single dad as well.
I truly believe in you don't tell your kids what to do, you show them.
That's good.
We have too many parents. We have too many parents that like to tell their kids what to do, but they won't show them. You go out and you become successful, but then, mom, dad, what about you? Or, you know, you go out, you get a great education, well, you didn't have that. So, you know, how about showing them what they're able to do with or without that education? How about showing them how what they're able to do of being successful? Kids will learn so much more from that. So I'm more in tune to giving my kids the experience so they can say, well, you know, I did this with my dad, so I know it's possible.
Right.
Versus my dad told me to stop drinking, but he was drunk.
We have an ultra super special guest with us today in the person of Judge Leonya Lloyd. All right, let's talk about your memoir. Let's talk about your book a little bit. Why is it so important? Why was it so important for you to write this particular book?
Well, I wanted to get across to my readers the message that they can never, never give up on their dreams. Too many times I saw people in my courtrooms who had given up a long time ago. And that was just not acceptable to me. Okay, that wasn't acceptable. And my job was to reignite in them a flame so that they could go after something that they wanted to achieve.
Sure.
And, you know, I've had them for 2 years, so by the time those 2 years were over and we saw people accomplishing something they thought they had never, ever would do, they gave up, and it showed them that they gave up too soon.
Hmm.
And so my whole thing was to, you know, Leona and I had talked about this, and she was one of the reasons I did this book, because we both wanted people to understand that you have to dream. And even if you dream that impossible dream, understand you can make it possible. You just can't quit.
Hmm.
You just can't quit. And it that's the main thing. You cannot quit. I don't care what happens. I don't care the fact that, you know, things crumble around you no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pick up the pieces. You can have failures, learn from them, keep moving, and keep going. This is why it was important for me to write this book. This was a message we always wanted to push, because we had been through so many things in our life that would normally would put people back.
Sure,
it would have been easy for us, you know, to stop. And, you know, particularly my mother got sick and how, you know, she made it difficult for us to study in college.
Right.
And to say, well, forget this, let me go get a job and I move and I just make some money and get an apartment.
Okay.
And forget the dream about going to school. Forget that.
Hmm.
I got to get away from here because my mother's not acting right.
Wow.
That was not possible to me and Leona. Leona and I said, this was our dream. My mother had brainwashed us since we were little to go to college.
Wow.
And because she had those problems with the nervous breakdown, with the subarachnoid hemorrhages and all of that, we had been brainwashed thoroughly by her.
Wow.
So I looked at her one day and I said, I don't care what you do to us. She turned the lights off so we couldn't study.
Right.
I said, I don't care what you do. I said, but we are going to stay in school. I said, you have made that something for us to believe in, and it's too late for you to take it back now.
Wow.
We said, you did a real good job of brainwashing. I said, and we're not quitting. I looked at my mother and said, we're not quitting. She could turn the lights off. She could do whatever she wanted to do. But it was, you know, we just had to then regroup and you replan.
Wow.
And our thing was, we're going to have to move on to campus because next mama's going to take the car and then we won't be able to drive to school. How are we going to get there? How are we going to lug all these books on the bus? And so then we went and we started interviewing for jobs on campus. We got that. We then went into the dorm and got the applications. And January the next year, we made the move.
Wow.
It's like you have the dream.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make sure it happens. You've got to make sure you take the steps. And you're going to hit potholes and you're going to hit all these negative things. Deal with it and keep moving. Keep it moving. And that's the main purpose of this book and what we both wanted to get across. And we both planned to write it together, but of course she passed.
Sure. Well, that had to be some pretty extraordinary circumstances early on in your life. So, I mean, that's a lesson in itself. I mean, how were you at that particular time when you were dealing with the issues with your mother?
We were in high school. Everything to us was going along pretty good.
Okay.
We were chosen to be the high school commencement speakers, and we were the first black ones at Mumford to do this. My mother had been a valedictorian, so she had spoken for her class in high school as well as her nursing school.
Okay.
So she was helping us with the speeches, and she was being the mother that we knew, the mother that loved us and you know, nurtured us, et cetera.
Right.
But a few weeks before we were to actually, you know, get up there at our commencement graduation, my mother had a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
And totally became someone we didn't know. And we were there at the hospital, the psych ward with my father, and we're like, you know, 16.
We turned
17 in August that year, but we were 16. And we knew she wasn't acting right. She was seeing Jesus on the TV screen, and Jesus wasn't there.
Wow.
And when you don't know what that is, and you're a teenager, And my mother, we would sit and watch TV with her all the time. We did stuff with my mother all the time. Mm-hmm. And so when she said, "You see Jesus there?" I said, "Huh?" And she said, right there. I said, "Well, Mama, what are you looking at?" I said, and I named who was on the screen. And she, and I laughed, mm-hmm. because me and my sister said, "Larry, Jesus ain't on the screen." And so she said, "Yes, he is." I said, "No, he's not." I said, then I stopped laughing. Wow. And I looked at my mother, because she looked serious, and I said, "Mama, do you still see him on the screen?" And she looked at me and my sister, and then she knew that's the wrong answer to give. So she said, "No." And so that was the beginning of us realizing when she would sit at night, and for those of us who are old enough to remember that TV did go off at night, and it didn't. It didn't play all day and all night. Like,
I remember that.
Right. And so, you know,
Star Spangled Banner comes on, right.
Right. She was sitting up watching a blank screen. And so we would come in there and say, "Well, Mama, what you looking at? Ain't I know?" And then she would get up and she'd go and get in the bed. Well, all of these were signs that, you know, the delusions and things like this were going on, but we didn't know. And then when she really started acting out, you know, getting, you know, really mean and nasty and hitting at my father and running out the door, no clothes on and stuff like that, he said, "I've taken your mother to the hospital." He said, "Meet me down there." And when we got there and we're looking and why are we here? Why are we in this unit? And, you know, we didn't know, we didn't understand. And when the doctor, you know, was explaining to us, she said a nervous breakdown. And he said, "Well, what causes that?" And he said, "Depression." Mm. I said, "Depression about what?" And she said, because my mother was cheerful all the time. And he said, "Only she knows."
Wow.
And that's something that, you know, we're going to have to put her in some counseling to see. Well, counseling back then was not like it is today.
Right.
And so her counseling consisted of, you know, "Miss Lloyd, what are you depressed about?" And she said nothing, and then that was it. You keep taking your meds. And she, back then they had a method where they would hook you up and basically shock you.
Electroshock therapy?
Yep. And she couldn't take that. She couldn't take it because she had had a subarachnoid hemorrhage before. And the subarachnoid hemorrhage, we were five. And we remember the ambulance coming, you know, to get her because they had got us out of school. And all she told us was to mind our father and to do what he said. She just didn't feel well. And they took her away in the truck. And so, you know, she was there for several months. But she told my father, she said, "Don't let them go in my head." She said, "Because if they do, I won't come back the same." And you have to promise me. And so she remembered this, and at least she remembers telling it to us when, you know, when she came out, she was much, much better. But she said, my father, he was inundated with questions, and "We need to do this. We need to bore a hole in her head. We need to get the fluid out. We need to." My father said no. And he said, "But you don't understand. She could die." He said, "No. She told me, no. She told me not to let you go in her head." And they said, "Well, if, you know, if she does live, she'll probably be blind," and she would be, they had a whole list of negatives for my father.
Right.
And he said, "I understand." He said no. He wouldn't pray in the chapel. And the thing is that she didn't die. Every day he came in there, when the doctors came, they saw she hadn't died, but she was blind. She couldn't see. And this is when she first opened her eyes. It took a while for she.
Bethlehem House is a respite for homeless working women. They can stay here for up to a year. When they come, they're kind of disheveled a little bit. But we try and put them back together here. Our goal is for them to save money. It's very important. And clean their credit. Because without good credit, your money is no good. Isn't that amazing? But they stay here for a year and we kind of get them back together and they go on.
So, Sam, I heard your grandma say they're donating that car to Charity Motors.
Yeah.
Said they're getting a full fair market tax deduction for it?
I do not know what that means.
It means we get whatever it's worth as a tax deduction, right when we donate it.
Nope. Not getting it.
It means we get money for it. So does the charity we pick. And the car goes half off to someone who really needs it.
Dollar bills, Sam. Whoop, whoop. Charity Motors.
Yep.
No working woman should be homeless. Find out how you can help at BethlehemHouse.org. And remember, the year's drawing to a close quickly. Isn't that something? The last few months of the year and we're already here. Well, I'm sure some of you are glad to see 2020 on its way. But there is a benefit to be had by you by donating your car to Charity Motors. And even if you don't have a car, you can make a donation because guess what? The needs never stop. Find out more about Charity Motors at charitymotors.org. Charitymotors.org.
And this is when she first opened her eyes. It took a while for she to open her eyes back up. And then when she could see my father, she just said, you know, who are you? And he said, I'm your husband. She said, I'm married. And he said, yes, and you have two little twin girls. They're 5 years old. And she said, I have kids. My mother didn't remember anything.
Wow.
And the sad thing I write about in the book is that she... when you have that, it's considered like a bleeding stroke.
Mm,
and if you know anybody who's had a stroke, it takes away a lot of the memory.
Wow.
It takes away a lot of your skills. People who have strokes normally can't continue doing the jobs that they have done. And they're either going to be fired or, you know, or they quit. They can't do the job.
Right.
They go through counseling today to reinvent their lives. To readjust and see what you can do, or they get on assistance because they can't do the job they did before.
Right.
Well, my mother couldn't either. She couldn't either, but there was not anybody telling her anything or counseling her. My father didn't understand why she wouldn't go back to work after 10 years. He didn't understand. She still was a nurse. She still kept her reciprocity up.
Mm-hmm.
And she just kept saying no. She told her girlfriends who were nurses, they said, come on, Naomi, you can do this. You can do this. Just follow us and just follow us. It'll all come back to you. The fact that they said it'll all come back to you, they knew as nurses, Mama had lost some of that brain power that she had. And because they were nurses, they just didn't know the degree. And I used to hear... you know, when my parents were the other grown-ups, and I'd hear someone ask my father, are you going to stay or are you going to leave? And my father said, I'm not going anywhere. He said, this is my wife, for better or for worse.
Wow.
And he said, I have two little girls. And he said, I'm not going anywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into The Spectrum with Bob Ivory. Sorry I missed you last time. Had some issues to deal with last week, but I'm back and I'm glad to be back on the block. Today, we're talking about what men want. And as a subtitle, you can call it What a Good Man Wants/Needs in a Wife or Mate. But at the end of the day, we're talking about what men want in relationships, meaningful relationships. Despite the perils of the epidemic and all the drama that it brings, eventually this chapter will pass. And when it does, meaningful relationships like marriage will be on the top of the menu. It doesn't seem like it now, but we will eventually move beyond our fears of human contact and seek out the kind of intimacy that brings human beings fulfillment and satisfaction. If you're one of those women that finds herself on the outside of a meaningful relationship more often than not, you may find this episode of The Spectrum with Bob Ivory particularly useful. If you want to find out what men want, keep listening, because I may answer some long-standing questions that you may have. But let's go over a couple of rules. Rule number one, let go of the notion that all men are dogs. What may be more to the point is that you spend too much time around kennels where dogs live. The truth is that men are as varied in character and nature, just like women. In some cases, the kind of man you meet depends on where you're meeting him on his life journey. There are many variables that shape human character. It is a mistake to make assumptions about a man's character that you've only had 10 seconds to examine. Rule number two, learn to spot a good man. What does a good man look like? Well, let me give you this general definition that I think will cover it in general. Obviously, there's more to it, but I think this is the general synopsis that gives a good overview. The definition of a good man in a basic sense, I will define a good man as one who respects himself, honors his parents, takes responsibility for his actions without making excuses, and understands the importance of being a productive contributor to life. Spotting a good man will require study over time, because the only way to truly gauge the character of a man is to watch him over time, particularly when he doesn't know he's being observed. Well, ladies, here are five things that a good man is looking for in a potential mate or wife. And this is from an article I found online called The Well Mind. And I think it provides what I'll call a good gauge, a good starting point in terms of what men are looking for in relationships, things that men will appreciate. So here are five of them. Let's begin. It's no surprise that sex is super important to men. Most times men will admit that it's number one on their list for what they want in marriage and relationships. And research suggests that men tend to have higher sexual desire than women. However, many men have other desires. Let me say that again. Many men have other desires outside of sexual relations or emotional needs. Husbands don't always ask their wives for what they want, and many have thoughts and feelings that they keep to themselves. The first on the list, because this is in no particular order of importance, but number one on this list is affection. Yes, indeed, men do desire affection, whether it's holding his hand in public or leaving a love message on his voicemail, or massaging his shoulders, showing that you care about him through actions of fondness will touch his heart. Try different ways. Let me rephrase. You may want to try different ways to demonstrate how much you care about him by being warm. Simple things you can do include telling him how much you love him, cheering him on when he's feeling doubtful, and telling him you're sorry when things go wrong. Now, I don't want this to be confused with coddling baby men. It's a different thing altogether, or coddling men in general. These are simply ways of being supportive, and I want to make the emphasis there that at the end of the day, all of this comes down to being supportive, and I'll call this various means of being supportive. But these are the kinds of things that men appreciate in a relationship. Number two, belief in his capabilities. Many men think it's important for them to protect and provide for those they love. Let your significant other or your husband know that you believe in his talents and skills and are supportive of them. Your encouragement is the most meaningful of anyone. The most crucial thing you can do is make your man feel like an adult and not like a child. That bears repeating. The most crucial thing you can do is make your man feel like an adult and not like a child. But this goes back to one of the first points I made, and that is observing the character of the man in the beginning. And this is not something that happens 3 seconds into the relationship. This is not what it is. This is something for you to put in your arsenal, to tuck it away, so that if you find yourself going deeper into a relationship, these are things you want to keep in mind in terms of the types of things that men appreciate. Well, it has been outstanding, my friends, to have this time with you. And I do appreciate it. I do appreciate the time that we spend together, the time that you choose to listen to me on Bashani Radio app. I count it a privilege to be a part of the Bashani Radio app family. It's an awesome experience. I want to greet my friends in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, as well as my listeners here in the U.S. and around the world. Thank you all for tuning in. Well, guess what? I've got a special gift for you. Connect with me on Instagram at Bobby Ray Ivory Jr. on Instagram, at Bobby Ray Ivory Jr. on Instagram. And you know, I've told you before why it's Bobby Ray Ivory Jr. Because there's more than one person calling themselves Bob Ivory. And that's their parents. You know, the parents did that, and there's nothing I can do about that. So if you want to connect with me, it's at Bobby Ray Ivory Jr. on Instagram. Connect with me on Facebook, if you will. But I've got a free audio book that I want to give to you completely free of charge. I want you to have it. But I only want you to have it if you reach out and say, send one to me, Bob Ivory of the Spectrum. Send me one. I'd like to have that. No mailing, just a nice free download. Well, my friends, I think you know what's coming next as we wrap this up. You know that I want you to go out there and have a fantastic day on purpose. And you know I mean that. Be well, my friends. My friends here in the U.S., happy holidays. Be safe and be clear. Bye for now.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcasts. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.